Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
On this edition of the Wizards Talk podcast, it's my exclusive conversation with NBA five-time All-Star John Wall. John spent about 30 minutes with me talking about how he's been dealing with the passing of his mom, gives us the very latest on his rehab, and takes a trip down memory lane talking about that 1 year at Kentucky where he ended up being inducted into the Hall of Fame, and shares a story about when he declined Slam Magazine's request for an individual shoot. Instead, he wanted to bring his brothers along for the ride. All that and so much more on this edition of the podcast. And just a reminder, for all of you that have been watching our Big 20 series presented by McLean Mortgage, this week, we have been releasing our top five. Here now is my conversation with John Wall.
Porzingis against Mahimi now. Nice defense and a steal by Bonga. He's got Hachimura open. Here's Rui for the dunk.
What a pass by Isak Bonga, doing the little things. And that's where I think he's going to make his money in the league, being a defender, getting out in the break, being able to pass. Kind of reminds me of a guy that used to play here, one of your ex-teammates, Trevor Ariza.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going to talk about. Trevor Ariza, or like a guy like Anthony Robinson, one of those guys that can be able to knock down shots and defend at a high level.
Appreciate the time, man. Welcome on the podcast. We haven't talked since training camp, and obviously I want to start. How are you doing, man? A lot of fans have asked me, you know, how's John doing after the passing of your mom? How are you holding up?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. You know what I mean? It's not never going to be easy. I mean, you have days when you dwell on it and think about it a lot. But like I tell a lot of people, just having like a lot of love and support around me and family members are a big key for me. And then just being able to be around my team and being in the gym, like that's my sanctuary. Like that's where I feel at peace and where I feel calm at. And I know that's where she would want me at and doing what I love to do. And then just being around my family. And my son and all that, so it's been great.
How have you been able to kind of like take some of the lessons that she taught you since you were a baby and kind of like applying it today?
It's kind of tough, you know what I mean? But I just know like how she was. She was a hard-working woman. Everybody loved her. She never sugarcoated anything. She was going to tell you how it was, and that's kind of like just how I try to be. But like every day, like, you know, I might wear this necklace with her name on and just try to think of it as much as possible, and then I have a neck tattoo with her back there and just know she's always watching my back. And I just try to like instill a lot of things that she would want me to do and just watch out for people that she know does not have my best interests at heart. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she's up there telling me that and giving me that guidance that I probably didn't see when she was here that I get to see now.
I thought a lot about not only you, but Tanya and Sierra, your sisters. And the funeral was beautiful, man. It was probably the best home going you could have for your mom. Can you just speak to just kind of the support you've been given and people that have reached out to you during this time? And I know if you want to send a message to them, what would it be?
Oh, I just appreciate all the love I've been getting, support. Appreciate the love. It's been genuine. Mm-hmm. I kind of understand we're having a lot of love throughout the NBA community, NFL community, just the celebrity community, and just the, not even just those celebrity people, just the regular people that I still initiate myself with and have supported me since I've been in the league for 10 years. I've been in D.C. and the support I have from all these amazing fan bases and my Kentucky family, and then all the people in North Carolina, just to see all those people come out and show that love and see her go away the right way was very dope for me. And I think she touched a lot of people. I mean, I think that's one thing that people got to appreciate, because everybody that's been writing me or just posting their own messages about her on Instagram was talking about how much love she had. So I think that's the most important thing.
I have to tell you, the first time that I met her, we had just met in Chicago during the pre-draft, and she allowed us into your home. And she was so real. She kind of reminded me of a family member of mine. And the one thing I always took away from Miss Francis, and she was the realist. Like, she would tell you straight up, but she really loved you. It was not, all mothers love their kids, but
yeah, for sure.
That Hall of Fame speech that you had still resonates to me and a lot of people. where you really spoke to like what she went through to make sure that you had what you needed. How much are you thinking about that as you apply it to Ace moving forward now, being able to be there for your son?
Man, every bit of it, to be honest, man. You can't take nothing away from it. Like I said, like that speech was like, I had like bullet points written down, but after a certain point, it's just like when I got there, it was like no more bullet points. It was just speak from the heart, and that's kind of like what I try to do on any speeches I have, and just speak from what I know, because that's when I think it's more free-flowing and more genuine than anything. And everything I said was everything she has sacrificed for me to be who I am, and that's why I said, to this day, I still sit back and think, like, did I give her the best life? You know what I mean? Because, you know what I mean, you just feel like you never accomplished enough. Mm-hmm. But, like, just everybody keeps saying, you need to stop dwelling on that because you did. And to hear my aunts text me, like, you gave my sister the best life. She was always happy. Like, I'm still like, well, did I do this? Or did I miss out on this? You know what I mean? We all can sit back and say that. But when somebody's gone that you love that much, and with, like, my best friend I talk to, like, 7 to 10 times a day, you still kind of wonder, what more could I do? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, every morning I send her a text. Every night I still send her a text. FaceTime like 5 times a day just to see, you know, that message won't be clear, but she's still not thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm interested to know, you talked about the support system like you got from like everybody around the league and in the entertainment world, run of the mill people that like on the street. But talk about your Wizards family. I know that Brad went down with you, wanted to be there with you. You guys have always talked about the brotherhood, how the friendship is more important than anything else. Just the support system that you were given during that time.
Like I said, this felt like home from day one. Like I told everybody, I want to finish my career nowhere else. I want to be. My mom seen me get drafted here. My dad's from this area, and just all the support I got, man, it was amazing. Like right when I got the phone calls in my hotel in Charlotte, and Brad came right down. You know what I mean? Like I try to tell everybody, like when you have two great basketball players like that, you're gonna have differences on the court from time to time. But like, I don't even call it a basketball friendship. It's like a brotherhood outside of basketball. Like we would have this relationship no matter what. And it's just what we built over years. But, like, I wasn't able to see him through the funeral, but everybody kept telling me, like, how he was breaking down, and it really hurt him a lot. And how he was walking, like, out to the hallway, and then even just talking to Ted a few minutes ago, like, how Brad was still hurting on the flight. Like, you can't find that type of genuine love, you know what I mean? Like, I try to tell people, we're 2 years apart of playing with the Wizards alone, but this is like a brother and a friendship we had for a long, long time. And the support I have for him and his family has been great, and my Wizards fan base is amazing. Like they always ask me every day and tell me they miss my mom. Everybody at the arena say they miss my mom. They just wish they could see it one more time. Or like me just posting videos and see the love she get. It's not I'm doing it because I want it. It's, I think people should see how she was, and I think that's how genuine a presence she was. But the Wizards family, the organization, the fan base, everybody that's covered me throughout my 10 years being here has been amazing.
Much love and much respect. May she rest in her rightful place.
Sure.
So we try to move on and transition into you now. Not only are you trying to deal with this, but you're also coming off the most significant injury you've had in your career. Where are you right now compared to maybe where you were at the start of Media Day last time we talked?
Well, I'm great now compared to Media Day. Like me being able to play basketball now, like to play 3-on-3, 4-on-4, a little 5-on-5. Just show clips of what I'm able to do now. It's been a lot of hard work and sacrifice. I mean, a lot of hours of getting rehab and getting treatments. And a lot of times, just going through the same routine of being bored. I remember when I first had the surgery, I couldn't even move my foot like this to be able to go through that process of even being in Miami in the summertime. I had to wear a walking boot in 90-degree, 100-degree weather. That wasn't cool. But all the stuff I've been through and everybody that's been there to help me out has been great. So, like, I'm just taking it one day at a time, one step at a time, and like I try to tell everybody, like you see me dunk, you see me run, it's a lot different. That's not playing in games. That's not seeing, okay, you play 38 to 40 minutes and then see how your body reacts the next day. Like, you won't know that until you play in the game. And that's why I'm not rushing the process of trying to re-injure anything, just taking my time and taking it one day at a time.
So you talked about like how the steps are kind of boring, but there had to be a moment where when you did get out on the court and you tested your Achilles where you were like, this feels good. Do you remember when that was?
When the video went kind of viral, when they posted when I was doing dribbling drills at the practice facility and just doing things like, you've been there plenty of times, you see me do little stuff, and I was like, man, I feel like I can jump now. And they were like, no, just on tippy toes. I'm like, well, this is boring days. I'm not trying to shoot jump shots like this. So kind of when I got in, I was able to do moves full speed, being able to jump off that leg. I think that was the most exciting thing for me because I used to always be hesitant to jump off the leg because how bad the bone spur used to hurt. And for me to jump off of it, land off of it, push off of it, and don't have no reactions or setbacks to it, it was a great day for me.
The day you dunked, I think it was in Detroit. We shot it, and again, it was another one of those videos that kind of went viral. You dunked before that, though, but were you surprised to see kind of the reaction on social media of people being like, well, if he can dunk, he should come back? Like, how did that feel that day when you were in Detroit, you dunked, and then you saw kind of the reaction to it?
Well, I already knew. I said, well, if anybody see me dunk in person, I think I dunked one time in Boston, too, y'all film before. I knew when I dunked, then I like, oh, everybody like, well, he's doing these type of dunks he can play. Well, it's a lot more to basketball than just dunking. But what made me even feel comfortable even want to do that that day was the day before in practice, I windmill and I jumped off my left leg and dunked. So that was exciting for me to be able to dunk off the leg I had injury on. And to windmill, I'm like, well, okay, I'm making the right steps. I'm doing the right things. And just seeing the positive outcome of all the hard work I put into it, that gives me more motivation to even work even more harder to understand where I can be. Mm-hmm.
And then you playing some 3-on-3, there's some 4-on-4. When you're out there, and I told you this the last time I saw you playing, I think it was like last week, you were playing with some of the coaches. I said to you, I said, wait till your teammates who have never played with you before see a John Wall pass for the first time. So how exciting was that next step to get out there kind of with your teammates and go through some drills?
Well, it was great because really my first practice was Toronto, and I was even shocked to know I was going to get to practice. So when I got that message, I'm like, oh, well, I get to play with the guys and get up and down. It's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. And I kind of threw it past the Bonga, and I think like he wasn't like anticipating it. He was kind of like running to the basket, but then he had to step back and shoot a three. And he was like, well, I was like, well, that's something you have to get used to if you want to play with me. So I think that was exciting. And just seeing me run pick and rolls and do those type of things, I think like just me being able to be in the atmosphere of going up and down with those guys and competing with those guys, I think I kind of like uplifted them a little bit and made some more excitement into practice.
I've known you for a decade, and I know the littlest things have motivated you in the past. But there are a couple of more things that I think are bigger than anything else you've ever been motivated with. Obviously, that angel in heaven that's looking over you and your son right now. Have you ever been more motivated to get back out on the basketball court in your life?
No, nah. For one, I was motivated like to get back just by hearing all the critics say what he's done. He don't deserve a contract that he got, all that. So that was fun. But just to like have my son is even more to see him get to see me play for the first time, and then just have my mom up there as an angel, like you said, like now, like you really appreciate, like not saying I didn't love the game and didn't appreciate every minute I got to play, but now you understand how quickly and easily things can be taken away. Mm-hmm. And especially having somebody that's always been there to support you no matter what, or making sacrifices for you to even get to the level you are now, that can't be there. Like, she'll be there in spirit every game, so I'm ready to get out there and play like every game, every moment for her.
Have you visualized it? I know you do a lot of visualization before games about how you want things kind of go, but have you visualized opening night next year?
Well, if our first game night, I'll be honest with you, my first game's not in D.C., I probably won't play, just to be realistic.
So you want to do it home?
I'm going to try to force the NBA my first game to be home next season, just so I can just feel like, I really don't know how I would feel, you know what I mean, just seeing like how much emotion and adrenaline is going to be going through my body. I think that's going to be pretty dope and devastating to see, like, just, not devastating, but just like dope to see how it goes, like, you know what I mean, to see like my son there, my girlfriend, all that there for the first time to be able to see me play. And then just know my mom's there in spirit with me to get that run out there and hear the fans go crazy. Like, that's something I'm very anticipating to wait and see.
You were telling me a couple of weeks ago, because I know how you have dealt with minor injuries, significant injuries, all the gamut since you've really been in the league. And you told me a couple of weeks ago, this is probably the best you have ever felt playing basketball as a professional. No bone spur, you know, the Achilles is repaired. Like, what does that feel like for you, like, walking around healthy?
Well, it's feeling great. Like, I get up every morning, I'm like, okay, I don't have no aches. Like, I can sit like this with no aches in my knees. Mm-hmm. Sit like this or get out the bed in the middle of the night, go to the bathroom, I have to walk on my tippy toes because the bone spur is on fire. Like, all those type of things where I was dealing with, like, dang, I feel like I haven't played 20 years already. That's how my body used to feel at times. And I would get all the massage, I would do all the treatment, I would do all the coats up, that still wasn't helping. But now it's like, I can feel like high school. Like, if I didn't stretch, I can go out there and dunk right away. Like, I couldn't do that in years past. So, like, other than 16, 17, where I felt healthy, but I still had a bone spur in my heel, and I think just a certain shoe I was wearing was helping it, this would be the most healthiest I've ever been.
All right, I want to show you a picture real quick. So, a couple of weeks ago, it was the 10-year anniversary of you being on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So those of you that are listening on the podcast, you can Google this, but the people that are watching this right now, What would you say to that young man today if you had a chance to talk to him?
At that age?
At that age. You right now talking to that kid.
Kind of tough. Like, if that kid right there was like, felt like he was on the top of the world. Like,
literally.
Like, the star in college basketball that brought basketball back to Kentucky was dope for me. You know what I mean? One thing I probably tell myself at that age is to put in more work more seriously, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like, I worked out, I did those type of things, but I was just so gifted from God that I didn't really have to put in that extra work like most people did. So I would think, like, my work ethic was perfect. I think we'll just really concentrate on the things I needed to get better at so much more. Because I can do everything. I was fast. I was athletic to everybody. I was always the best player on the court. But did you really work on the things that you wasn't great at that young of an age? Mm-hmm. That's a big difference I would tell myself.
You were there for?
8 months.
8 months. And you were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Do you remember when they approached you about that?
Yeah, man, to be honest, not even just to talk about that one. I got approached about every cover almost that whole year. And the funniest one was, to me, is the one that I love so much, is the slam cover. Because mm-hmm. you ever look back, every point guard that Coach Cal had, it was like Derrick Rose had his own cover of slam. Tyreek Evans had one. And they came to me, it was like, yeah, you want to do the cover by yourself? I was like, no, add Eble, add Patrick, add DeMarcus. Because I was like, I already have a Sports Illustrated cover by myself that says it's the best player in college basketball. So me looking at it, I know a lot of people find, like, okay, he's getting all attention, but it's a team thing. And I'm like, well, put these guys on the cover with me, because I don't know if Patrick will ever have a cover or Eric Bledsoe will ever have his own Sports Illustrated, I mean, slam cover. So once we all did it together, I think that's what brought our team even more together and made us feel more like a brotherhood. And I think that kind of surprised Coach Kyle a lot. Because when I came to school, he's like, don't lead by yourself. Take three or four guys with you. And I end up taking four with me in the first round.
Are you surprised that even to this day, how close you are with those guys? I know E. Bled came to the funeral. I mean, are you surprised that, like, you could pick up a phone and whatever you need, those guys have still got you?
No, because I think it was bigger than basketball for us. I mean, we just came there and, like, we knew Patrick was a rising junior and we knew we was a freshman coming in. But Coach Cal, like I said, I don't think you can find too many coaches that can get 5 to 6 5-star guys. There was a number one person on 18 that averaged 30 shots a game or 30 points a game to come and play as one team. And our camaraderie was so great. We had team dinners all the time, movie nights, all those type of things. Everybody go to Coach Cal's house. So I think it's dope. Like, me and DeMarcus was the one guy I met when I was 14. And going there, I'm like, well, I don't know if me and E. Bled can get along. I mean, he's a point guard, I'm a point guard. And we kind of just meshed like that. So we got a tattoo, stands for 3A for life for all of us. So, like, for me and E. Bled to being DeMarcus' wedding night, and me and DeMarcus being E-Bled wedding, it was dope for me. And I think it's bigger than basketball for us that we have that type of friendship. And DeMarcus kept calling, like, I want to make it, but I can't. Yeah, so much going on. But his mom came. Yep. So that was important to me. And to see E-Bled there, that was dope. So I think all those guys that you see the type of love that I got on that type of day, that lets you know that it wasn't just a love for me, it was a love for my mom.
Absolutely.
And everybody feel like she was a second mom to them. So that was dope for them to come and show her their support.
I've known you 10 years. Can you believe it's been 10 years?
I feel like I just got drafted yesterday.
So the other day I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and he asked a question that it kind of like made me think. He goes, dude, is John Wall like your, like, one of your kids? He's like, dude, every time I've seen, like, you interview him over the years, dude, what do you not know about John? And it hit me. I don't think I've ever interviewed an athlete more than I've interviewed you in my 23 years. I thought on this podcast I would answer the question that my friend asked me. John Wall, what do I not know about you? Right?
Now, I don't think you know everything, to be realistic. Unless Skillet can come over with something, I think you know everything.
I mean,
I think you know I like bowling. I love seafood.
For fans in D.C. and really in the NBA, what would you not know about you? Have you created some new hobby? I mean, are you...
Yeah, a new hobby for me that I've been trying to do and trying to get into is reading books. So that might be something you don't know. That's just starting to come, though.
Okay.
So I've just been trying to, like, talk to, like, kind of my old heads and ask them, like, what type of books are dope to read and try to collect those and try to get into that. But other than that, I think you know literally everything.
Skillet, is there anything that we don't know? See, that's what I'm saying. Like,
she couldn't even tell you.
If there's anything that people wanted to know about you, it's pretty obvious.
Well, I know one thing you might know, but I think we both do know.
What?
We're shoe addicts.
You know what? That's true, and I think people know that about you and I both are sneakerheads, and I'd like to welcome you back to the family.
Thank you.
It's about time. have you got a new collection?
Yeah,
you got some new stuff?
I told you, man. Give me about another 3 months, we're going to have another soul.
You going to do a soul talk?
Yeah, got to have another soul talk.
All right.
You got to get it situated the right way.
You got to get it coordinated. All right.
With my team.
The other day I saw something that I laughed at. Your draft night. your draft night suit. And I saw Vegas, your rookie year, and your first game at home. Because I was like, you know what? Let me go back and look at this stuff to see if I remember all of it. Is there anything that you've done in your 10 years in the league where you take really great pride in it? Like a moment where you're like, that was probably the coolest. I know the shot is the biggest shot you've ever hit in your life, and that's like the moment. But is there something that you can think about off the top of your head where you're like, man, that was pretty cool?
I think I got two moments, though, like I can think of. I think my first game here when I almost had a quadruple-double, I think that was pretty dope. Like, you know what I mean? Come out dancing, then have a heck of a game, because if you don't look good. And then I think the game, like, one of my close friend Mike Bash, you know what I mean? Like, when I played the Celtics, I think that was a dope moment for me because I was so frustrated with myself because he tried to call him, like, the day before, and I had something going on. Like, I tried to call it back, but when I tried, she was asleep. She was out of it. And then the next morning, I'm thinking, like, okay, she's coming to the game. I get to see her. Then I get the phone call. She's passed. So that day, I didn't want to talk to nobody. Like, the whole day, I'm not speaking to nobody. I come to the game. I'm not in the mood to say anything. I'm just totally locked in another zone. I think we might have been down, like...
We played the Celtics then.
Yeah, right? I think we may have been down, like, 10 or 12, like, 3 minutes ago. And I'm like, if I lose this game, this is bad. This is not a good day for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just got into a zone where, like, I was making almost everything. Like, it was just, I couldn't miss. And then I remember I made a tough reverse, almost falling down. Then I got a steal, did an over the top over Evan Turner, and I made a tough layup, and we ended up winning the game. I think I came right to you, and I started. He asked me a question about how the game was, and it just broke down. I think like that was a big moment for me because I think a lot of people feel like, well, you did it because you get to meet Nicki Minaj. No, that was not the platform for me. It was about helping somebody that I felt that was genuine, and it felt like she was like one of my own little nieces. You know what I mean? I built that type of friendship with her, and to see that happen, it was tough for me, and still is to this day. And I think like just to win that game was the biggest moment for me.
Yeah, because people were asking me afterwards, they were like, what was it like? And I was like, well, I kind of like, I felt like I, you know, when you're in moments like that, it's real and it's raw, so you don't know like how to handle it. And I just remembered I needed to ask you about the game because you had a really good game, and then the father in me came out because I knew Maya meant something to you. And I was like, well, do I ask it? And it's like in real time. And yes, it was very emotional. And I think you said enough, and I let you go. Because that was just...
I think even if you would have asked another question, I couldn't even answer.
Yeah.
And then, like, I ran to the back. I walked to the back. You see tears on my face. And I get in the locker room, and I dap everybody. And I just sit in my seat with all my stuff on for a minute. And was just crying. Everybody like, what's wrong? And then I think, like, somebody eventually told him what was going on. It was just like, that game was for her. Like, it was more bigger than anything for me. You know what I mean? I think that's what was pretty dope. So, like, I mean, I feel like when somebody shows me loyalty and I show it back and I have that type of touch of feeling with them, it's nothing that can never go away no matter what happens. You know, and you kind of know what's going on with certain people. You know what their motive are and what their motive is not.
Yeah.
And sometimes in life, we always wish we could find what somebody alternative is or motive is right away. But sometimes God makes us wait and be patient. And I think right away we kind of clicked and I knew what it was.
When you do come back and everybody knows it's going to be, you're going to be about that action. Like, how do you control your emotions now? I feel like when I look at you now, you're a little more patient. I call it parenting, because if you ain't patient.
That's for sure.
Right?
That's a big
thing. Has that helped you kind of calm down? Will that change your game at all?
They helped me calm down, but I think like me just playing with so much passion and aggressive and anger, no, I don't think that's going to stop. Maybe hopefully getting frustrated without getting calls or talking to refs at times calms me down so I don't do that. Build a better relationship with those guys, to be honest. But other than that, I think like just the aggression and passion I play with, I can't. Like, even when I'm in practice, I practice for 40 minutes out of the day. I'm ready to like feel like I'm in game mode. Like, I don't have no friends. That's just how I play. I think I can't never take that away.
So the last really 3 years, the game has been taken away from you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think half a season, all of this season. What have you learned about the game since you've been gone? What's changed, if anything?
A lot of things has changed. Like, the league is, you barely touch anybody no more. We're shooting over 143s in the game. Last night I was watching Portland, Dallas, like 78 to 63 at half. Like, I mean, we used to only score 85 in the game. Like, the league has totally changed. But just don't take the game for granted. I don't feel like I ever took the game for granted, but don't ever take it for granted, because you never know how fast it can be taken away. And I think me just being going through what I've been going through, half a season, and a full season, not being able to play the game I love the last 3 years, you can never get that back. So take advantage of what you have left when you do come back and play.
While you've been gone, your guy has elevated himself to an all-star multiple years. What have you seen from Brad that has taken his game to that level, so when you come back, you guys want to do it and maybe take it to a higher level?
The way he sees the game now. I think he's always been a scorer. I mean, he just scored, maybe without putting the ball on the floor as much. Everybody thought he was just a spot-up shooter. Now he's creating plays off the dribble. He's scoring every level. He's scoring the mid-post, the post, floaters, layups, threes, transition, however you want. I think he's developing to that guy can score any level, any moment. And I think he's one of those daily players now that nobody really wants to see. And it's dope for him to see. And if he's not an all-star, I don't know what to tell people.
I mean, a guy like Trae Young, no disrespect to him. Like, he got the fan vote and all that.
No disrespect.
But I did notice that when the players voted, he was the second guard. He should start if you just took it off of the player vote. So game recognized game.
And I feel like that's where the votes need to start going.
Really?
Yeah.
So would you
put... Don't get me wrong. Media is media. Fans is fans. It's favoritism on both sides. But as a player, you know what you got to do when you guard that person or not, what you got to deal with. So I feel like they should get 50% of what the fan votes are. I think they should take over the fan votes and 50%. The media should get 25, and the fans should get 25.
Now, what would you say to those that would say players, some, will just vote for a guy that maybe they have the same agent or that's his homeboy?
Well, if that's the case, then why was Brad the second guard chosen? That's just off of talent. That's talent alone and what know what type of game plan you got to have every night. Because if we basing it off that, just because the team got the best record, they supposed to get two or three guys.
You should reward winning.
Well, that's not how it always been.
That's true, but you
know. That's what I'm saying. So I'm like, I'm fine with rewarded winning, but let's say if you have a team that got two bona fide all-stars, should be, they might be eighth seed because they dealt with injuries that year. One team might have one legit all-star, but they might have another guy that might sneak in. Why should they get two or three when you know they've been healthy all year and the other team hasn't?
So you're saying you should take it under advisement of every circumstance is different.
Yeah, that's why I say give 50% player votes, 25 fan, 25 media. So you're still giving the media what they want. You're still giving the fans what they want.
Because the players know because they're competing against
it. That's the case. If you want to do it by that, like, we've been fourth and fifth seed a lot of years. Mm-hmm. Guys under me have started one time. That's only because we started off the season with like 9 or 10 TV games.
Right.
I think if you gave us 9 to 10 TV games or 15 TV games before All-Star, the fans would get to see who we are. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, Trae Young's a heck of a talent. I think that's why his fan votes were so high, because they got to see him on TV a lot before the All-Star votes went.
Let me ask you about social media and how you use it to get your message out there. Before you came into the league, it was just starting up. How much do you use that now as a way to communicate to your fans?
I try to interact with them from time to time. I mean, but I feel like social media is like, I think people feel like social media is real life. Mm-hmm. I think like everybody want to live their life through social media. Like, social media don't even know every move and every platform you do. They don't. Like, I do giveaways up there. I do stuff for my foundation and backpack giveaways. If I'm doing something throughout the season, or post like my outfits for fashion and things like that.
Right.
That of designers or fans get to see our dress and stuff like that. But I feel like everything they do had to be put on social media. It shouldn't be like that. And I think that's what's killing society now.
Look at you. Hey, when you're almost 30 and you're talking like a...
I just feel like that, but I've been telling my assistants besides that for a long time. Every time we talk about it, I'm like, if you really just look at it, a lot of people wake up in the morning and look straight to see what news is on social media before they even text their mom or do any little thing. Like, that's the first thing they want to go to. Like, oh, well, this is what I'm thinking today. Or this is what I thought of in my dream. Like, why do they need to know that? They don't need to know everything. Well, I just had a burnt taco today.
Right.
Like, it's like everything is predicated today. And I think if you took Instagram away from people, they wouldn't know what to do.
One more Wizards question. So has anybody you've seen this year surprised you in a good way where when you come back, you want to play with that guy?
Bertans. Now, I knew he could shoot the ball, be with the Spurs, but I never knew he could shoot the ball that well. Mm-hmm. And I think this is very amazing. Like, if I got the opportunity to have him and Brad on both wings at one time.
Have you ever played with anybody like that?
No.
So what do you think when he's shooting the ball from 33 feet?
It's going in.
Every time?
The whole team does. Like, even if it's a bad shot, you're like, it's going in.
Huh.
Because, you know, you might be like, oh, that's a bad shot. But for him, it feel like it's a good shot because he gets it off so quick. And we haven't seen him make 7 or 8 in a row.
Right.
He's like, there's no way he should have made that one. I give you one last night. He threw it to him in the corner. The guy was like, this already still made it. In Cleveland. He opened the game for us in the second quarter.
So I'm curious to know, like, if he comes back next year, what does that look like for you? Because you've never, again, if you've
for
got
me,
Brad on one corner and him.
For a long time, I'm trying to lead the league in assists. I think I should have the opportunity to do that with those two guys and then just all the other pieces that we have. Because now it gives the opportunity. If I'm penetrating and going ISO, where are you helping from? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You really want to lead one of those two guys?
Can you still be the John Wall that at times was reckless with his body because all he cared about was winning? Have you changed that part of your mindset when you come back?
Nope.
You're still going to play the same way? I can't wait. My man, I appreciate it. Always, it's good to see that smile back on your face.
Appreciate it.
And we're going to get that sneaker thing done soon.
Appreciate it.
My guy.